With the news media covering increasingly more news about data breaches and security, and the use of personal data in ways that invade people's privacy, you need to know how to keep your business's data, not to mention your own personal data, safe from hacks, and your business operating in the most secure environment. Otherwise, this can not only hurt your business reputation, it can cost you clients. Welcome to Data Security and Privacy with the Privacy Professor. We are here to help you mitigate potential damages and losses before the hackers even have your number. Now, here is the Privacy Professor and your host, Rebecca Harold.
Hello and welcome to Data Security and Privacy with the Privacy Professor. I'm Rebecca Harold, your host. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to the 42nd episode of my show. I use my show to help raise awareness of information security and privacy risks and issues, and I also strive to provide listeners worldwide with practical tips and actions to help improve information security and also to help you better protect your privacy. Please subscribe to my show on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Google Play, Overcast, TuneIn, CastBox, PodToppin, or whatever your favorite podcast or news app is. And of course, subscribe to my show on Voice America Business Channel site so you will be notified just as soon as each new show is available. You know, I sincerely appreciate all of you who tune in, and I love to see people tuning in from all over the world. I got my October stats for the general locations of my listeners who are tuning in through my Voice America Business Channel website, and I saw that I now have listeners from just under 60 countries, and I also noticed a large number of new listeners from Yulee, Florida, here in the United States. So thank you for listening, Yulee, and also from around the world. And I've noticed that I have my greatest number of listeners with respect to specific cities outside of the U.S. in Heilongjiang, China, and listeners there, please forgive me if I pronounced your city wrong, and Dublin, Ireland. So thank you. And also so many other places as well. You know, these numbers represent only the listeners who are coming to the show through my website, through the Voice America Business website, and not through all those apps that I previously mentioned. You know, someday I need to determine how to get the stats for them as well. And I really love visiting all of you via this show. And also when I then go out and check online to see more about your countries and your city. So thank you worldwide so much for tuning in. Now, if you are interested in being a sponsor or advertiser for my radio show, or if you need help with information security or privacy, please get in touch with me. And thanks also for all your feedback and questions you're sending me. I really love getting all your messages, so please keep them coming on in. Now, my November Privacy Professor Tips message was published on October 30th. Did you get yours? Well, if not, please sign up for them. I've always provided them for free. You can sign up for them by going to privacyguidance.com and submitting your email in the box in the upper right part of your screen. So for my tip this week, I'm going to do something a little bit different. It's more informational, but it is a tip. So as background, I'm a member of the United States National Institute of Standards and Technology, better known as NIST, Privacy Framework team, our working group team. Now, this isn't the same as the NIST Privacy Engineering Working Group or the NTIA Privacy Working Group, which are also doing activities. But I want to focus on the NIST Privacy Framework Working Group. We had our first NIST Privacy Framework workshop in Austin, Texas last month in October. And I encourage all my listeners who want to stay up to date with what NIST is doing with the development of that privacy framework and to see all the related work products and documentation I'm going to give you some websites and URLs that you can bookmark. So if you're interested in seeing a recording of that first workshop in Austin, Texas, you can go and find it at nist.gov/news-events/2018/10/kicking-nist-privacy-framework-workshop-1. Whew, I know, that's a long URL. You know, if you listen to this recording, if you listen back to it, you'll be able to catch it all, I'm sure. Now, I had the great opportunity to moderate the third panel of that event where we discussed processes necessary to include within a privacy framework. Here's another one. The NIST recently published a request for information, or RFI, if you hear RFI, that's what it stands for, asking for input on the NIST privacy framework. Now, you have until December 31st, 2018 at 5 p.m. Eastern time to provide input about what a privacy framework should have within it. So see more at the RFI landing page on the NIST website, which is nist.gov/privacy-framework/RFI. Now, there will also be an RFI webinar on November 29th, 2018 at 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. If you want to learn more, and also if you want to be able to ask questions about it, you can also register for the webinar by going to that site, nist.gov/privacy-framework. You'll be able to find how to get to it. So here's my tip. If you want to stay up to date with what NIST is doing with development of the privacy framework, follow all of these resources and sites. Now, do you want to participate and make your voice heard about the current RFI, the upcoming drafts related to the privacy framework, and so on? Then follow these sources and sites. And if you have further questions about the NIST Privacy Framework project, there are contacts listed on those sites that I just gave you the URLs for. So you can get in touch with folks through them, or certainly you can send me an email using RebeccaHerold@RebeccaHerold.com, and I will either answer your question if I can, or I'll point you to someone who can. So today's show topic, I'm excited for this. It's another visit to another specific requirement within the EU General Data Protection Regulation, better known as GDPR, that went into effect this year, 2018, on May 25th. Now, GDPR has been in effect for almost 6 months now. And I've done 3 shows on GDPR so far this year, and I'm so happy to add my fourth to the GDPR series today. Now, if you want to see all of the past GDPR shows along with all my other shows, you can go and see those at the Voice America Business site or go to my website, privacyguidance.com/radio.html. And I've listed all of my shows there on my privacyguidance.com site within categories to make it easier to find certain types of shows. You can also do a search for Privacy Professor within those podcasting outlets that I mentioned earlier. So with regard to GDPR today, I'm focusing on a topic that many organizations are struggling with understanding. What are considered to be legitimate interests as a basis for legal processing under GDPR? Legitimate interest is discussed within GDPR in Recital 47. Now, just a portion of consideration stated within this recital indicates that, quote, the existence of a legitimate interest would need careful assessment, including whether a data subject can reasonably expect at the time and in the context of the collection of their personal data that processing for that purpose may take place, end quote. So context is very important when making related decisions about whether or not what you're doing is meeting compliance with GDPR. So what should organizations do with regard to careful assessment to determine whether or not a situation is indeed considered to be legitimate interest of the organization, which is the data controller. That's the term within GDPR that's used, data controller, to enable the organization, the data controller, to use personal data. Well, I'm excited to have two GDPR experts on the show today to discuss this specific GDPR topic of using legitimate interests as a lawful basis for processing under GDPR. Teresa Trester Falk is the Chief Global Privacy Strategist leading Nemity's Global Privacy Strategy. Now, Teresa is a thought leader in the privacy industry and helps identify the future needs of privacy professionals by engaging with customers, privacy and data protection regulators, key policy groups and think tanks, and other privacy thought leaders. Teresa has over 20 years experience in law and over 14 years as a global privacy professional. We also have Gabriella Zanfir Fortuna. She is EU Policy Counsel for the Future of Privacy Forum, or FPF, where she leads the work on European privacy law and policy and its impact on all focus areas of the FPF, including de-identification, artificial intelligence, mobility, ad tech, and education. Prior to moving to the U.S., Gabriella worked for the European Data Protection Supervisor in Brussels, being part of the team that advised the EU legislator on the GDPR during its legislative process. Gabriella dealt with both enforcement and policy matters and actively participated in the work of the Article 29 Working Party. You can see more about both Teresa and Gabriella in their bios that are posted on my Voice America business site in the information about this show. So Teresa and Gabriella, thank you so much for being my guest today. Welcome to my show.
Delighted to be here.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you here to talk about what, you know, can be a pretty complex topic. So I think it would help to start with maybe if one of you could please explain for our listeners. And again, we have a worldwide audience, many of whom don't have a background in law. But can one of you maybe explain what GDPR generally means or intends when it requires that personal data be processed on the basis of legitimate interests?
Yes, Rebecca. I will take this one. Okay. This is Gabriella here, and I just want first to say hello to all the listeners all over the world. So let's take a step back when we are talking about what the GDPR means by processing data on the basis of legitimate interest. And this is necessary because it's very important to acknowledge that the European Union data protection law framework has as one of its essential requirements that any time personal data is processed, and by processed we also mean collection. So, you know, anytime when personal data is collected, there needs to be a justification for that collection. There needs to be something that we call a lawful ground for processing, which technically means a justification. There are six such justifications provided by the GDPR, and this is quite a different situation than, let's say, the usual approach in other systems, and especially in the American system, where usually, at least at the level of collection of data, you know, collection is allowed. You don't need to justify collection as a rule. But then rules start to apply for different types of uses of data. Well, the paradigm in the GDPR is as such that whenever you are even collecting data, and then, of course, whenever you're processing them in any way, you need one of the six lawful grounds to apply. Consent is one of those lawful grounds, but is not. It doesn't have, let's say, a privileged position in the GDPR system, But there's an entire discussion there, of course, about consent. But then the legitimate interests of the controller, so of the organization that collects the data or processes the data, as well as the legitimate interests of a third party, are another justification for processing and a justification to allow lawful processing of personal data. Now, exactly what is meant by legitimate interest? Well, we have the entire show to talk about that. But primarily, this ground recognizes that there are instances where organizations don't need to go and ask each data subject before collecting the data, before processing their data, if they agree with such processing. But there are certain instances where such processing can take place if safeguards are put in place, if there is a balance between this interest, this legitimate interest of the controller of the organizations, and the rights and freedoms of individuals. So, indeed, it is quite a contextual type of scenario, just as you pointed out, Rebecca.
Oh, yes. And like you said, we'll be getting into some different scenarios. So I think that'll help for our listeners, too, to clarify what some of that means as well, along with your great explanation. So what if a data controller or data processor does not process in what is considered to be legitimate interest, what kind of penalties can they face?
Well, first of all, the in general, not having a lawful ground, be it consent or in the alternative legitimate interest or necessity to enter a contract, which is one of the other lawful grounds allowed, generally this triggers the higher level of fines in the GDPR. This is indeed one of the core requirements of the law. It has a specific place in the law. And then depending on different, different mitigation measures, the different mitigation factors that might be taken into account, the fines can vary very much, but as we know, the maximum for this higher level is the already famous 20 million euro or 4% of the global annual turnover.
Yeah, that sounds huge. So it's only been in force for not quite 6 months yet. So have any data controllers or data processors been penalized yet for violating the legitimate interest requirements?
I'll pick up on that one, Rebecca. It's Teresa. And at this point, to our knowledge, no, there hasn't been a determination yet that is specific to legitimate interests. But there have been a couple of things, and this may be an appropriate time to kind of piggyback off of what Gabriella was saying. I'm not sure if we mentioned a very detailed legitimate report that our two organizations put together, about 40 pages detailing legitimate interests. This is pre-GDPR. But I took a look at our research database at NIMITY to see what kind of guidance has come out since the GDPR to look at that question specifically. And there have been a couple of interesting things that I think might be interesting for our listeners. So, as you pointed out in the introduction, Rebecca, the law is high level, right? You read some of the detail from the recitals. But again, it's very it's high level to think about. But where we really get into some of the interpretation is in the guidance from the regulators. And so since the GDPR, there have been three regulators that have provided more detailed guidance on how to put legitimacy into practice. And I'd like to speak about those three a little bit because I think that gives us some practical context. So the first is the UK ICO. And if our listeners, if you haven't had a chance to look at the resources on the UK ICO site, it's very detailed, very comprehensive. They're very good about putting out lots of practical guidance. And one is a 70-plus page document on legitimate interests. And wow. In that guide, yeah, it's super useful. There's checklists and lots of detailed guidance. And the first thing they note is that, you know, legitimate interest is the most flexible basis for processing, but one shouldn't assume that it's always the most appropriate. Hmm. Then they go on to identify it, and Gabriella started talking about this. You know, there's a balancing test. There's sort of three parts to analyzing whether or not on a practical level you can use legitimate interest as a lawful basis for processing. So I'm going to mention those three now, because when we get to talking about case studies and practical things later, we'll want to reference back to that. So the first step is identify whether you have a legitimate interest as an organization. The second is, and this one gets overlooked a lot, but it really comes out in the case law, and our research document shows that. Show whether the processing is necessary to achieve the purpose. And then the third part is you have to balance the legitimate interest against the individual's interest, rights and freedoms, and Gabriella mentioned that. So again, the guidance doesn't provide all the detail, but it does get into, you know, some of that. But most importantly, the UK, the ICO points out that the big differentiator post and pre-GDPR is the requirement to document your legitimate interest assessment. So previously, I mean, before working at NIMITY, I worked for large multinational organizations, and I can say that there was quite a bit of reticence about using legitimate interest because there's so much lack or so much, so little guidance. Mm. And although some organizations use it a lot, but now you can't just say you're using it. You have to justify how you're using it and why you're using it. So they point out that the significance of documentation. So again, I'll just reference that UKICO. The second DPA, the Spanish DPA, came out with some really specific guidance on the use of CCTV systems. So a few details from that guidance. Video surveillance is permitted generally where processing is necessary in the public interest, right? Safety of people, goods, facilities. But they really point out some of these counterbalancing safeguards, right? Data minimization will be important. So there's some spaces that you might risk a disproportionate collection of personal data, like change rooms or locker rooms, employee rest areas. So thinking about minimizing data capture. And then they also reference, in addition to considering legitimate interests, in Spain, at least, there are very specific industry regulations that come into play, like sporting events and financial entities. And then finally, the Finnish DPA also issued guidance. It's more or less the same. They call it their balancing test, a six-step balancing test. When you break it down, it really is, it all aligns with the three parts that we've been talking about. So there's those. Well, there hasn't been a case that, you know, where someone's been penalized. There is this guidance. And there is one case that I would like to point to, though. It is a bit of a head scratcher. And I wish we had a German attorney on the call. Gabrielle will bring a lot of depth as a European attorney, and she's brilliant at this, going deep into European law and sensibilities and thinking. I have always represented U.S. companies, so multinationals thinking about those practical implications. But the case I'm referencing is an administrative court decision, the Lüneburg Administrative Court. And this case gives us the first glimpse, if you will, on the application of the GDPR for administrative courts. And it was a legitimate interest case. So I'll just speak to it briefly, but again, it's a head scratcher and the German literature is all over the board on it. But I'm highlighting it to say, it's causing some challenges for those of us, you know, practicing. But in the lower courts, a plaintiff had argued use of legitimate interest for CCTV monitoring around a gym and in a hotel room. Ooh. And the lower court required the plaintiff to do modifications in a certain time frame. The parties had settled most of the issues, but the penalties the costs and the court proceedings had not been settled. Mm. So before the GDPR, so post GDPR, now the administrative court is reviewing the costs, court proceedings, you know, those matters. But essentially the decision says, I mean, this is the way it's been interpreted. If a case has been settled, then Article 6.1F, you know, under the GDPR won't, you know, we won't review previous cases. But if it hasn't entirely been settled, even if the merits were settled, now those matters of the merits can be reviewed under the GDPR. And because the implementing law in Germany for the GDPR was considered to be maybe a little excessive in comparison to what the GDPR required, this is now kind of it raised quite a bit of conversation about the application of the GDPR. So I'm going to leave it at that because it's a complex case, but it's worth following because I think it's the first one and the only one out there that it's kind of suggesting what the guidance might be on the application of the GDPR.
Oh, that's a great example. And also the timing is great, too, because right now it's time for a quick break to hear from
perfect timing. We'll need one.
Yes. So now we're going to take a quick break to hear from our valued sponsors that I do appreciate so much. I'm speaking today with Teresa Trester-Falk and Gabriella Zanfir Fortuna about using legitimate interests as a lawful basis for processing under GDPR. I'm your host, Rebecca Harrell, the privacy professor. You can contact me with questions and comments about this show, as well as provide topics, suggestions for other shows using my email, RebeccaHarrell@RebeccaHarrell.com, and also through my privacyguidance.com website. Please stay with us. We'll be right back after these important messages from my sponsors.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
The Privacy Professor is your trusted source for effective information security, privacy and compliance advice, compliance tools, education, consulting, expert witness services, and board positions. Visit us online at privacyprofessor.org. Rebecca Harrell and Associates offers information security products, privacy and compliance tools, education and consulting. Rebecca also provides keynote speeches and her free Privacy Professor monthly tips messages. She has published since 2007. Visit privacyprofessor.org for help and answers to your questions. Have you heard about Symbus360.com? The Symbus system includes information security, privacy, and compliance management, policies, procedures, and forms, third-party and vendor management, training and awareness, breach response and management, employee tasks and assets management, and risk management automation. Symbus also offers Alien Vault Unified IT Security Management at reduced pricing.